On the Record on News Talk,
brought to you by PwC, a community of solvers coming together in unexpected ways. It all adds up to the new equation.
The Department of Health has published its latest COVID stats inside the last few minutes. It's announcing 1,725 cases diagnosed in the 24 hours up till midnight last night. There are, as of this morning, 473 people in the country's acute public hospitals, of which 97 are in the intensive care units. That compares that 97 to 74 people who were in intensive care at this time last week. The 7-day average now is 2,110. It is against that backdrop that the government, with NPHET's advice, has decided to continue, albeit at a slower pace, its reopening of society and the economy, including the return of nightlife. Professor Anthony Staines is a professor of health systems at DCU. He's a member of the Independent Scientific Advocacy Group. Anthony, should the government have gone ahead with even the partial reopening of society against that backdrop?
They could do it if they chose to bring in other measures to reduce risks. So we're thinking here of things like more effective ventilation in pubs and restaurants. We're thinking about more effective ventilation in schools. More effective contact tracing. I mean, effectively, we've switched off contact tracing completely in schools, and the level of contact tracing we've had really since the beginning of the pandemic hasn't been good enough to control the virus. So at the moment, things are not looking amazing at the moment. If they continue as they are, we could be in serious trouble perhaps towards the end of November, and I'm hoping that won't happen. But it is down to what the government does as well as down to what the people of Ireland do.
The very first thing you said was about the role of ventilation. So I've just pulled up the Fáilte Ireland guidelines for reopening pubs, for example, which were obviously revised again in the last couple of days before the return of the nightclub sector. And there is some measures in there about ventilation. It says that the proven importance of ensuring adequate fresh outside air circulation should be factored into operational practices, that outlets should consider a ventilation assessment of the business and the use of CO2 monitors, and they're provided with further information about air conditioning and ventilation. So the guidance is there for that sector to use.
The guidance is there, but it's not unlike the guidance in schools, which says pretty much the same thing. I mean, the guidance in schools is use CO2 monitors, and if the ventilation seems to be very poor, as measured by the CO2 monitor, come and talk to us. In other countries, the guidance has been much more explicit. The guidance has been use a CO2 monitor, but also start bringing in HEPA filters for the air in the rooms, because we know from many decades of experience that we don't need to have a full air conditioning plant put in to improve ventilation, because that's very expensive and it takes a very long time to do. But we have portable air conditioning devices available now at very reasonable prices, which have been shown in the last few months to effectively remove virus particles from the air. So there is quite a bit that can be done with windows and doors, but in many buildings that's not enough, certainly in many schools, which I'd be more familiar with. But based on my experience with Irish pubs and restaurants, there would certainly be pubs and restaurants where ventilation is going to be a challenge. You know, with the best will in the world and whatever the operators do, there's still going to be difficulties.
Does all of that suggest then that the guidance or advice on ventilation and CO2 monitors isn't enough and that it ought to be something enforceable by law?
I think it ought to be strengthened. It's very difficult for a pub to decide what to do, because the guidance isn't very specific about, well, if your CO2 monitor says this is what you should do. In other countries, the guidance says something like, well, if your CO2 monitor is consistently above 800, then you need to take immediate steps to bring in portable ventilation to reduce it, and you use your monitor as a tool. But as such, monitoring CO2 doesn't improve ventilation at all. We are doing some very good things. I mean, unlike the UK, where they seem to be abandoning COVID passports, we're keeping them, and that will be very helpful. And we're also encouraging people to wear masks. Now, I think that will be useful. It could be put more forcefully perhaps than it has been, but it will be helpful, and encouraging people to work at home, as Roland Lynn was doing the other day. Again, that's very sensible, because if you don't need to travel into work, then you should probably stay at home and only come into work as and when it's required.
As a professor of health systems, what do you make of the burden which is being placed on the health system as it stands right now? I read the figures just a few minutes ago, 473 people with COVID in acute hospitals, 97 in intensive care, fewer than 20 available ICU beds last night. There seems to be an attitude among the HSE that they have some scope to scale up that capacity, that this is a burden that they seem comfortable dealing with for the short term.
They do. I mean, my colleagues in HSC worked their socks off last winter to prevent a major disaster. And they did. They deserve great credit for that. You could argue, I think, that they shouldn't have to. But the price of what we're doing is that the waiting lists for other care, which are already remarkably long, are just going to get longer. I mean, there is a waiting list program to be brought into operation over the winter, but as I think Paul Reid more or less admitted yesterday, elective care is off the agenda in many Irish hospitals for the next few months. We know the winter is always a difficult time, and for example, in the children's hospitals, the intensive care units are full, not with children with COVID, but with children with other respiratory diseases and with the usual intensive care activity. So winter is always busy, but COVID is going to make that much more difficult and much more challenging. And the fewer cases we have in the community, the better for everybody. But the government is not really they don't have as a serious objective to reduce the number of cases, to bring this under control. If they did, they would be activating public health to do precisely that.
There was a time, Anthony, when you and others in the Independent Scientific Advisory Group were advocating for the zero COVID approach. I don't know whether you think it's the nature of further variants or societal activity in the meantime, which means that that's pretty much off the table now. So we're going to, in some way, have to learn to live alongside COVID, because it's never going to be fully eliminated from society. At this point, 18 months in, what do you see as being the way out? Do you think that there will be a certain level of quasi-herd immunity? Do you think that the broad level of vaccination will mean that COVID just becomes another respiratory illness that we learn to live alongside? Or what do you see as being the final end state for this?
I think the likely end state is, at the moment at least, is that COVID will become endemic. Now, what that means is that we will have every winter, probably, major outbreaks of quite a serious respiratory illness, which generates a significant number of hospitalizations, a smaller number of deaths, just much like influenza. I mean, we have influenza vaccines, but every winter people die from influenza. Hospitals are filled with people with respiratory illnesses, not just influenza, but mainly. In the future, that will be influenza and COVID. And unlike influenza, after COVID-19, long-term effects are relatively common. So we're going to see a build-up of people over time who have varying levels of damage from COVID itself. And it's not yet clear what that damage is. It's clear the potential is there for maybe 7%, 10% of people who get COVID to have long-term problems. And some of those are very severe and some of them are relatively minor.
Do you think we've even begun to contemplate to a proper degree, Anthony, what it's going to take to have a health system that can just absorb that, for it not to be in constant crisis mode?
No, we haven't. And we are showing no signs of taking the kind of root and branch reforms to move towards a primary care-based, universally accessible healthcare system. We need it. We needed it badly before COVID ever happened. But I think COVID makes it even more urgent that we should move the health reform agenda on and actually make it happen and stop talking about it. Because we've been talking about it for 20 years, but we're not getting anywhere with it.
We will leave it there. Professor Anthony Staines, Professor of Health Systems at Dublin City University and a member of the Independent Scientific Advocacy Group. Thank you for joining us this lunchtime on The Record.
On The Record, on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC. A community of solvers coming together in unexpected ways. It all adds up to the new equation.